Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. The South Carolina House of Representatives sent their budget proposal last week to the Senate. But what does this mean for you? We look at who may get a pay raise, how much money goes to higher education needs, and what bills may soon be stuck behind the budget once debate begins soon in the Senate. Have I got your attention? Well, I hope so. It is, after all, why we named this podcast The South Carolina Lead, spelled L-E-D-E, harkening back to the old-school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. Well, we hope you listen to all four sections of our podcast while you're on the phone trying to cancel your lost credit card from St. Patrick's Day or whining about your busted bracket. Come on, Virginia! And a quick programming note, The South Carolina Lead is celebrating its 10th episode with this podcast. Thanks to all who listen, offer suggestions, and tell others about our podcast. We know we're not perfect yet, we never claim to be, but we're all about self-improvement here at the South Carolina Lead, and we hope you keep listening and tell others too. And now, quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that the Mount Pleasant Town Council gave first reading to an ordinance that would outlaw single-use plastic bags and styrofoam containers in the city. Mount Pleasant is the state's fourth largest city, and this move comes at a time when a House-approved bill that would prevent municipalities from passing such ordinances is making its way through the Senate committee process. Number two, Columbia Republican Senator John Corson has been suspended from office for over a year now, but resolution isn't expected anytime soon. Corson was suspended following his indictment that he pocketed campaign funds via his political consultants Richard Quinn and Associates. But his trial date, set for March 19th, has been pushed back by his lawyer, and a new date has not been established yet, according to the state newspaper. Number three, the Associated Press reports that South Carolina's largest school district says it's going to reprimand several hundred students who participated in a national walkout to protest gun violence at schools. Greenville County Schools spokeswoman Beth Brotherton said Wednesday that students who participated in the walkout will be cited for cutting class. She said school records show that about 530 students participated at about a dozen high schools in the district. District officials had said before the walkout that they were discouraging students from participating and did not plan to allow news media to cover the activity. And staying in the upstate, number four, more than 800 jobs could be created in Spartanburg County thanks to three economic development projects. The Herald Journal of Spartanburg reports that Spartanburg County Council is expected to give initial consideration to tax breaks for the projects. Now, if they go through, the projects would create a combined 846 jobs and total $482 million in investment in Spartanburg County. That's a whole lot of money and a whole lot of jobs. But now let's find that lead note we buried. It's around here somewhere, I think. This episode, we're looking back at the budget House lawmakers approved last week, a controversial abortion bill in the Senate, and school district consolidation. The budget has passed the South Carolina House of Representatives. But so what? What does that mean for you? Also, how will its passage affect other bills floating around the Statehouse, specifically the personhood bill in the Senate, which will soon debate the budget? So to make sense of all of this, we brought in a first-time guest but longtime Statehouse reporter, Shauna Adcox. You've seen her name for years with the Associated Press, but now she's Assistant Columbia Bureau Chief for the Post and Courier. You've also seen her name. You probably don't know how to say it, but I always knew. Well, I always used to say Sienna, but it's Shauna Adcox. Shauna, welcome to your first time on the lead. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Well, let's get right into the budget that the House passed last Wednesday around 12:15 in the morning. Can we talk about why it was 12:15 in the morning? Why they had to do it so early?
Well, that's actually normal for them. On the first day, they just go through what they have no problems with, no amendments, and they just push through. And on the second day, they get to what they want to argue about. And it's a leadership strategy, frankly, to make them do it all in one day, because then they get tired, they don't want to argue, they even start pulling amendments off. And so it may take a long time, but they want to get it done.
Same thing goes for reporters that have been covering it all day. You know, it's like okay, when's it going to happen? Yeah. What were some of the highlights that you saw in this year's budget? You've been covering the budget process for years now. Were there any surprises or anything unexpected, or what was some of the points of contention, perhaps?
No surprises, really. Points of contention, always the local government fund, which there were no extra money for it in there again this year. Pay raises for cost of living pay raises, that's always a perennial issue, especially for Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter. She, again, didn't get what she wanted.
But we saw a close vote on that. I mean, it was like 56 to 49.
There were actually a lot of Republicans who voted for with her. I think 10 or 11 Republicans. And she thanked them publicly on the floor for doing so.
Well, it was a pretty close vote, and we don't really see it ever get that close. But is it going to be something that will maybe go through again next year? I know she keeps saying every year it's going to be next year, but
what's there's a possibility the Senate could do its own thing. The House Ways and Means has done nothing before, and the Senate added it. They did an $800 bonus. They got to a 3.5% compromise at 1 year. So it's not for sure that there will be no cost for everyone across the board, but it just is looking kind of doubtful.
But, I mean, like you said earlier, that they have already covered some other things, such as, you know, insurance costs going up and the retirement system, too.
Yeah, so the $56 million went to cover premium increases. And they'll actually still have some deductibles and copay increases, but they wanted to make sure that premiums didn't rise and they've covered their benefits for pension costs.
And I know you mentioned earlier we were talking about just some things we didn't see any additional funding increases for the local government fund. Can you talk about what that is and what we saw maybe some lawmakers trying to do during the debate in the House with the local government fund?
Yeah, so the local government fund dates all the way back from to 1991. They passed a law that said 4.5% of the prior year's tax collection has to be set aside in this thing called the local government fund. And that's distributed to counties and cities on a population basis. Now, they haven't funded it as per that 4.5% since the Great Recession, since 2008. It's at $223 million, but that's still $105 million short. Now, there's been efforts every year since 2008 to do what the law allows. I mean, to do what the law says, basically. Mm-hmm. But it gets defeated every time.
And this, in turn, leads local cities, local counties to have to raise fees and fines, essentially, to pay for these requirements.
That's the argument, because there's a separate state law that restricts their ability to raise taxes, so
because it funds to raise other fines and fees and taxes, but it also it goes to fund those unfunded mandates, in a sense, those requirements from the state.
Right. That's what the state law was made for. It's supposed to cover everything from court security to, counties are by law required to provide free office space for DSS, health, even the legislative offices. They have to do that. So it's supposed to pay for all those mandates. Now, the legislators who have suspended the law every year say that that's an arbitrary number, and they're not really sure what is or is not a state mandate, and there are other pots of money that go to local governments. So they say the whole law needs to be revamped, but of course study committees to try to figure out a way to do so have not ended up with any legislation.
Surprise there. So, and just kind of wrapping up this budget portion, higher education got about $50 million this year. I mean, is that talk about perennial issues. I mean, that seems like higher education or state pay raises. I mean, these are always the common themes that emerge that want to see more money go towards, but seems like they don't really get too much more than they always do.
Well, and colleges are took another big hit during the post-recession years. They have been actually cut to the point where public colleges, only about 10% of their money comes from the state. The legislature just hasn't restored what it used to pay. And the colleges complain this requires them to increase tuition. Mm-hmm. The legislators complain that our tuition's the highest in the Southeast. They butt heads on that, obviously.
It's almost like kind of going back to the local government fund where they complain about having to raise things. And, I mean, it's always about money when it comes down to it.
Right. And there used to be – the state used to do periodic bond bills, borrowing bills, to pay for maintenance. Well, they haven't done that since 2001, and there's a ton of what they call deferred maintenance out there that's just not getting done.
But I know we talked to Andy Shane about this last week, too, and the bond bill just doesn't seem like it's going to materialize whatsoever this year.
Certainly not this year, no.
Mm-hmm. Just because people don't want to pay?
Well, A, it's an election year. B, Hugh Leatherman even said, as long as we have a governor that promises to veto it, it's not going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And McMaster says that he will veto it.
And that's Hugh Leatherman, who's chairman of the Finance Committee, which is now is the budget is over there now. So tell me about, a little bit about where we go now, since the budget has passed the House, the $8.2 billion general fund budget, and it's in the Senate. Where does it go at this point?
Well, so it'll have to go through the Senate committee process and then hit the Senate floor. And unlike the House, the Senate is not confined to a couple of days. They can argue it as long as they want, but they have to be done, or they should be done by April, end of April, because May is when everyone gets out.
Mm-hmm. And
or supposed to get out.
So how does that impact the bills that are in the Senate right now? We've seen some bills floating around. We've seen them take up some bills this year, and everyone, of course, keeps complaining about them, about the pace of some of these, the bills going through. But does the budget help provide a little bit of a convenient excuse for maybe not making things go through?
Oh,
and
sure.
Why can't the budget?
Because once the budget hits, the budget debate starts, it gets a special order. And they can't get onto other things until they get past the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that blocks everything of contention. Now, if it's a bill that everyone agrees with, or some resolution honoring somebody, then it'll go through. But any bill with controversy won't.
Mm-hmm. And there are 7 weeks, I think, until May 10th. One of those weeks is a furlough week, so that's about 18 working days. I mean, and if you tie up about two of those weeks in the Senate, I mean, but the Senate seems like they've been moving the budget pretty quickly. I remember last year it moved pretty quickly.
When there's less money to argue over, it moves quicker.
Because we only got an additional, what, 270-some million?
Well, around 300. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that had specific places to go, like premium increases.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a lot of money to play with.
Speaking of bills in the Senate that can't really go anywhere right now, we were talking about the personhood bill a lot this session so far. Shona, can you tell me a little bit about what that bill does and what its history has been? Because I think we've been seeing these bills for a while now.
A long time.
But doesn't seem like we've... This is, I think, the furthest this one has gone
sure.
before.
Yeah.
And so tell me about what the committee process has looked like for this Senate bill and what its current fate is right now.
Well, the bill would essentially outlaw abortion. It would extend legal rights to a fertilized egg. So obviously that means you can't kill a fertilized egg.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument is, even some of the Republican opposition, is that it won't allow couples to have fertility help, you know, IVF treatments. And if a mother her life is in danger, now they added a clause that said if the mother's life is in imminent danger.
Mm.
But as the Republican women noted, you know, that may be a little too late if you wait until her life is in imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
But this bill has been introduced for, I don't know, every session for many years.
Yeah.
And it's never gotten this far, but it has new sponsorship behind it and who have really pushed for it. And I think that's the reason why it's gotten as far as it has.
But where is it right now? We made it out of the committee process, but it's
somewhat... on the Senate. Well, it's on the calendar for debate, but it has opposition to it, there's a technical blockage basically to it. And until that's removed, it probably won't get debated. Or if they were to vote to put it on special order. But that requires a two-thirds vote, and it's not going to get a two-thirds vote.
Mm-hmm. Even though the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, it's not...
there's even some Republican opposition to it. Republicans who thinks it goes too far.
Now, does that change a little bit for the dismemberment abortion bill? Because that is another one that's working its way through, and that's a House approved. That one's been approved by the House already.
Right. That actually has more of a chance because the personhood bill is a Senate bill.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a chance this year, it has to cross over to the other chamber by April 10th,
mm-hmm.
Which is not going to happen for personhood.
Yeah.
But because the other bill is a House bill that they passed last year, there's actually chance that could go through.
So right now we might be seeing some behind-the-scenes action of them trying to get the necessary two-thirds to get that into a special order slot?
That's all. And there's always, you know, some deal-making. I'll support you on this if you let this go through. Mm.
Because it comes down to it. It's really surprising when you get into the Senate. I mean, compared to the House, one person can hold up a bill as long as they want to. I mean, that's where it really comes down to the power of the Senate right there.
Right, yeah.
And then this liquor bill, too. We're talking about abortion. We're talking about budget. Now we're talking about liquor. I mean, it's kind of a weird, wonky bill, but one that could have ramifications if it's not pushed through, right?
Well, so several years ago, Total Wine sued. Right now, there's a a 3-license limit to any owner of a liquor store. You can only have 3 stores statewide total. Well, Total Wine sued because they have a store in Charleston, Greenville, Columbia. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have one in Aiken, I believe. Last year, just a year ago, the state Supreme Court declared our 3-license limit unconstitutional, and it was to take effect in 15 days in terms of there being no limit anymore.
Huh. Yeah.
And so the legislature pushed through on another bill a compromise that extended that 3-license limit for a year, and that extension expires April 5th. So they're trying to do something by April 5th.
Because then again, it could just all of a sudden be...
Well, the argument for those who oppose getting rid of status quo, basically, is that any CVS and Walmart or grocery big box chain who wants to sell liquor could apply and get one.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in this state, there's a lot of opposition to that.
So right now that bill is in the Senate, though, and it needs to get through the Senate in order for it to... before this takes effect in, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
So
the Senate can move quickly when they want to.
The deliberative body.
Right.
They use that term when they need to, when they don't want to. That's right. Besides those bills, is there anything else that we should be keeping our eye on? I want to wrap up with the Senate, but is there anything else that people should maybe be keeping an eye on? I know things really change on the last day of session because we see a lot of bills move through, but do you think before then we'll see anything that might be unexpected kind of move through at this point, in your opinion?
In an election year, there's not a lot of surprises.
Mm-hmm. Just the House guys up for re-election this year, not the Senate, but...
Right, all 124 House members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to end up with one final thought, and that's school district consolidation, speaking mm-hmm. of what the Senate might be doing. You just had an article in the Post and Courier about a new movement, a new wave kind of pushing for school district consolidation. What is school district consolidation? Why is it becoming a hot topic again?
Well, it's the idea has been around for forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a hot topic because, A, the school superintendent, Molly Spearman, is pushing for it. And her putting her weight behind it is kind of a big thing. I mean, the Supreme Court in 2014, in their order to fix the school system, mm-hmm. actually suggested consolidation. But legislators are kind of unwilling to go there because they don't want to stir a hornet's nest at home, basically. But what it means is... there are a lot of small districts mm-hmm. in this state, and they would consolidate with a neighbor, basically. They would merge, combine, whatever word you want to use. And the idea is that you would shrink administrative costs
yeah.
and expand what's academically available to students.
Yeah, because you have a lot of these small ones. I mean, I know Timmonsville is one of them, school district in Florence County, and you know, it's just a small school district. It's like just a high school, middle school, and grade school. And then there's other districts within Florence, especially Florence District 1. I mean, these big ones that should most likely be consolidated because then, you have all these – you have separate superintendents. You have separate financial CFOs. I mean, all these separate things when it could be, just one place. But people get worried about it because they think that there's going to be
– they're worried their local school is going to close is the biggie.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried about kids being bused to another part of the county. But it really is over your community identity, and you don't want your local school to close.
Mm-hmm.
And people are prideful of their local schools, basically.
So there's a Senate bill looking into doing this. Is that what you said?
Yes. So Senator Young has introduced this proposal multiple times since 2011, back when he was actually in the House. But it's actually advanced to the full Education Committee, which is the furthest it's ever gotten.
And so
it's still early in the process, and it's not going to pass this year because it's not going to meet crossover. But the fact that they're actually really talking about it is kind of a big thing.
Mm-hmm. So a lot to watch, especially since we have just a few weeks left, and like we said, about 18 days until the end of the session. So this is when things heat up. And
the regular end of the session, anyway.
Elaborate on that, Shauna, because I feel like there's a little asterisk right there.
Well, by law, they're supposed to end by, that Thursday, but they can pass a special law to continue to do certain things. Most usually that just means the budget.
Mm-hmm.
They can keep going as long as they pass special laws to keep going.
And something like that might be pertaining to, obviously, some nuclear reform bills probably.
Yeah, they need to get that done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We couldn't go one episode without talking about nuclear. We try and break it up. But there is that other bill, that joint resolution on the Senate floor, 954, dealing with extending the PSC, the Public Service Commission's ability to rule on Baseload Review Act request before them, dealing with Dominion and SCNG. And then that bill also was amended to deal with lowering or eliminating temporarily the nuclear premium on SCNG customers' bills.
Yeah, I would think if they'd go home without dealing with that, that voters would have a cow.
I think that's the first time someone said have a cow on the show. But no, again, that's why we saw the House guys get so worked up with the Senate guys the other week, when they had that press conference calling them out because, you know, their House seats are on the line this year, and
sure.
Senate's just kind of doing their thing and pacing it out and saying we're being deliberative.
The deliberative body.
That's
yes.
what they're doing. Well, Shauna, I appreciate you coming on. Shauna Adcox is the Assistant Columbia Bureau Chief for the Post and Courier. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's hit the old dusty campaign trail right quick to bring you up to speed on news regarding statewide political campaign activity. So filing began for offices last Friday at noon. Now, it's still too early to play the who's in and who's out game, but I wanted to give you all a heads up on the increasingly crowded 4th Congressional District race for retiring Representative Trey Gowdy's seat. Now, that seat covers Greenville and Spartanburg counties, and the number is subject to change right now, but so far there are about 10 Republican candidates gunning for the seat that Trey Gowdy has had since 2011. Now, the race has drawn several Democrats, but the deep red House district covering Greenville and Spartanburg counties isn't going blue anytime soon. So here are the Republicans intending to run. Deep breath, because it's a big list. Here we go. Political newcomer and veteran Barry Bell. Businessman Jordan Brown. Attorney Stephen Brown. Pastor Mark Burns. Business owner James Epley. State Representative Dan Hamilton. Radio host and Spartanburg County GOP Chairman Josh Kimbrell. Spartanburg County teacher Alan Ruff. And State Senator William Timmons. And former State Senator Lee Bright just announced that he was entering the race as well. Now, you might remember Lee Bright. He was in the Senate for 2 terms, and he was an outspoken state senator, known for his conservative stances, and he pushed a 2016 bathroom bill, similar to the one that disrupted North Carolina, by requiring people to use bathrooms that correspond to their birth gender. Now, it's worth noting that Bright was defeated in a 2016 primary by then-Governor Nikki Haley's backed challenger, Scott Talley, who is in the Senate right now. So, a lot of people in this race, and like I said, there's about 10, and we have plenty of other Democrats interested as well. So while we're not going to focus on too many of the ins and outs right now, I want you guys to know that this is a really hotly contested race up in the 4th Congressional District. And remember that the primary is June 12th for not only this race, but for others across the state. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Now, do you know what bobtailing is? No, I'm not talking about cute little bunnies. I'm talking about the practice of tacking on unrelated legislation to another bill in an effort to get it passed by the legislature. It's a practice that is prohibited in our state constitution, which states that every act or resolution having the force of law shall relate to but one subject, and that shall be expressed in the title. Now, the practice hasn't gone away entirely just because the Constitution says so. You can still find some in budget provisos or other bills that get amended. While it may not be true bobtailing in some senses, there have been changes to bills that expand upon subjects rather than introduce new matter entirely. But the state Supreme Court has struck down these unrelated provisions in the past and even pledged to start striking the entire law that was bobtailed. That was an issue in 2015 when the state budget was bobtailed with a measure that allowed the governor to continue appointing the director of the Department of Transportation. But instead of striking down the entire budget, the court made a change to its 2009 ruling and carved out an exemption for the budget. So, long story short, bobtail bad, Peter Cottontail good.
Aww. Now that's cute.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my Statehouse video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook page, our YouTube page, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. Read the Statehouse Daybook on SCETV.org. And listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCE TV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. And follow us on Instagram at scleadpod. We post photos from the studio and from around the statehouse. And we're also on Twitter at the same handle, at scleadpod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scleade@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on March 19th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.